What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Kinda Funny Games Cast. I'm one of your hosts, Greg Miller, alongside Forbes 30 Under 30, aka the future class of video games, aka the OK Beast Blessing Adeoye Jr.
What's up, Greg?
Not much, man. How you doing?
I'm doing good. I checked my mail today.
What happened?
I checked my mail today.
Oh, sure. What'd you
get? Was this an improv bit you all planned? Or
That's not how improv works, Andy.
Oh, I was checking my mail because I ordered an online order for clothes. I was checking an outfit that I really wanted. And as I was checking my mail, I came across a postcard with Taylor Swift on one side. I tore it in half because I wanted to hide my address. Taylor Swift was on one side, and on the other side was a note written to me. It says, "Hey, Blessing, that Andy sure is rude to me, eh? Thanks for sticking up for me. You're a real pal." And pal is like written in like capital letters with red. And then at the bottom it says, I don't know what it says at the bottom, honestly. It says Narmi B-Dog, which I don't know what that, does this mean anything to you?
Is it backwards?
Yeah, goodbye, Imran. Backwards.
Oh my God.
God damn it.
It says good eye, Imran.
No, goodbye, Imran.
Yeah, there's a B in there. There's a B.
Okay, gotcha. Interesting.
That's a B. God. That's a B right there. Yeah. That's weird. Who sent that, I wonder?
I don't know. It didn't have a return address.
Huh. It's a pretty infamous and famous signature there, though, right?
I've never seen it before in my life.
Andy, have you ever seen that signature Hispanic heartthrob Texas treat Latino heat clicking heads and ripping them to shreds? The globe trotting, headshotting, rooting tooting nitro rifle from twitch.tv, Andy Cortez.
I've gotten two packages just like that. Bless. I've gotten two postcards in the mail. Wow. One of them also said goodbye, Imran.
Where's Imran going? Does anybody know?
I'm not sure. But then the other one of them had the word backwards.
Trust. And it's spelled t-shirt.
It said don't trust. Yeah, trust was backwards. I'm not really sure where. I mean, one of these days, the people looking up all the Zodiac sort of ciphers are going to figure out what's happening here. Bless. So I guess we'll figure out in like 20 years when we're all dead.
I'm surprised I didn't figure it out, honestly, because this is a very Escape Academy like puzzle right here. Where
it's the exact same puzzle that was on Andy's, you know, that you were on the show. So the way this one works, because, you know, the postcards are my favorite gift to myself, is yours definitely took a trip. Because when Andy showed his last postcard, that at that time, I reached over, took out the postcard, wrote it to you, Blessing. Then I set it aside for at least 4 weeks. Then I was like, I got to pay some bills and I'll be right on time. And so I put the stamps on everything. And then I took it to the car and I said, "Jen, we got to mail these today." And then we went downtown for some reason. And then we hit them in the glove box, forgot for a good 2 weeks. And then I was like, "Wait, do we ever mail those bills?" Jen's like, "No, they're in the glove box." So I had to run out and mail all that stuff. And there it was. I forgot that was even in there.
Gift that keeps on giving.
Yeah. I mean, you call it a puzzle and it's just you wrote something backwards. Is that a puzzle?
You're a big Batman fan. Do you think the Riddler's first riddle of all time was just like, "Oh man, you got to go get this thing and get the sun to shine"? No, he started small. I'm starting small. The Grabbler, not known for his riddles, all right? So he's just getting there, teasing something about Imran. It's surprising none of you have gone to protect this man or told him
Grabbler
that.
It doesn't kidnap children, but also not about it.
Not above.
Look, we have a new mystery unfolding here by the Riddler. No, this is definitely the Grabbler. It's too easy of a puzzle.
this is a level one.
Batman just
right
looks,
here.
He's like, "It's trust backwards." It says goodbye, Imran. I gotta go. Don't bring this over to me. Master of Hype, Snowbike Mike, what do you think of all these postcards?
Oh man, love being part of the chaos. You know, I think I was here for the last time we did a postcard session. So maybe it's just a reoccurring thing. You know, Greg, I'm so glad that you really reach out to these guys on your team and make sure they feel valued and cared for. And like, you know, I hope these two really appreciate the work that you do for them, you know.
Man, if Mike didn't live so fucking far away, maybe it'd be easier to mail him things. But here I am, like Jesus of Nazareth, with this cross to bear of a PlayStation 5 fucking console cover that I can't get to this kid forever. The worst about it, too, is that, of course, we were only supposed to be working from home for 2 weeks. But somewhere in the fucking studio, buried, wrapped up with all the technology, waiting for one of us one day to go in there and work from a studio again, is a fucking shopping bag with a frisbee and a koozie for that fucking shark RPG game.
Nick is definitely throwing that out by
the man eater. No, I think it actually got, I think it actually made it, because even when went in there one time during pandemic, I was like, oh, this is for Mike. And I think I put it in my drawers, Barrett. Like, it's there. It exists. And
the alien from Destroy All Humans still at my house for Mike as well.
And that's the thing is, Mike, we had to stop sending you stuff because you got to come get it. All right. It's time for you to come get stuff. All right.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, of course, Tim Getty's not here. Bitten both eyes by snakes, but I pulled one of the LaCroix he left at my house. So that there you go, everybody. Oh. Tim lives on in spirits. It's Innocent Berry. What is it?
Innocent Berry.
I guess it does say innocent.
Huh. What's the difference between that and the normal
black berry? Raspberry, and then at the bottom it says, oh, it's like the thing. Zero sweetener, zero sodium, innocent. Equals innocent. Mm. I've never paid attention to LaCroix can in my life, you know?
Nor should I've never described a drink as innocent. Like, I don't like the usage of that word on a can, on a LaCroix can.
Mike, here's what I have for a question for you. This is jumping off a Kind of Funny Games Daily from earlier in the week. How do you feel that right now we are having a great intro to this episode, but for a lot of these sick fucking freaks out there, it's ruined because all the times I've paused have been cut out. So all the funny pauses, the pacing I'm here, you know, I'm like, Andy, I don't think of myself too highly, right? But clearly I'm like the Julia Childs of video game podcasts, all right? And I'm out here and I'm going bam and I'm making this delicious meal and I'm pacing it a specific way and I'm doing that thing like the fancy cocktail bars.
Did Julia Childs go bam? I thought that was bam.
That's Emeril Lagasse. Emeril? Nowadays they're all one. And I'm taking the thing off and the smoke's coming out and people are like, oh, the presentation. And then somebody's ruining it, Mike. They're just listening to all the words shoved together into like a disgusting trough.
I would never listen to a podcast that you created, Greg Miller, that way.
Awful. Thank you, Michael.
Awful.
Thank you. I'm kind of sad that they didn't have I don't think they have that functionality on Spotify because I tried to do it today because I said I was going to do it on KFGD. So when I listened to the it's actually not the latest episode, but this episode I'm on of the Boy Meets World podcast, Pod Meets World. It's the episode actually where they got Mr. Feeny on for the first time.
Okay, so the episode I thought you just slyly dropped down. You were on the Boy Meets World podcast.
Oh my god! Listen, Topanga, Danielle Fishel. I should call you by your actual name, Danielle. If you want, Will, if you want to have me on the podcast, I got a lot to say about Boy Meets World. It's my favorite.
That'd be like Yusuf being on the Scrubs podcast. That was a big moment too.
Yeah.
See, that was a big moment, but it was out of the blue. Where it was like that, where I didn't feel like there was a build up to that. He was just on it. There was no narrative, you know?
Mm-hmm. Like, was a narrative, or was it a reader mail?
It was, they had him, he was on a segment, I believe. And it was kind of built up if you listen to the episodes, because they were getting stuff sent from Ubisoft because they talk about video games on that podcast as well. And it was when you connect the dots, and then when they introduce them, they're like, hey, like he's the guy who helped send you guys games and stuff.
So he bought his way on. He didn't earn it.
You're saying I need to buy my way on to Pod Meets World.
As your lawyer, I don't know, maybe we'd have to have a sidebar on our own to talk about that. But, you know.
I'm trying to think of, because they don't talk about video games, right? They're talking about adult shit most of the time. Or most of the time they're actually talking about inside baseball of what it's like to work on a sitcom, especially as a kid. It's very fascinating stuff. I don't know if there's anything... we've had Wolf Riddell on the podcast. I guess that's the one connection.
Shows. Yeah.
Greg, is there anything is there anything I can pull together to either send to them or something I can say to get me on this podcast? Because I'm not one to beg to be on shows. I've never begged to be on a podcast in my life.
I've never heard this man beg for anything in his life.
He's never begged.
But I'll beg to be on Pod Meets World. I really want to talk to the three of them.
That's I can promo right now.
We'll see what we can do.
Set up and cut a promo.
Okay. Everybody, I know what you're going to say. Hey, we'd love to, get to the games. I came for game stuff. We'll get there in 1 second. Right now, we're going to give Blessing the floor. Barrett, start a stopwatch. He has up to 60 seconds. If he wants to end early, he can. But this is the pitch that Roger Pokorny will break out and we will send to.
This is way too much. I'm not good on the spot like this. I feel like we should know this by now.
Unless you have 60 seconds. Your 60 seconds are starting now.
Listen, Daniel Fishel, Wolf Friedle, and Ryder Strong. I'm such a big fan. I've listened to Bohemian's World. I've watched Bohemian's World all my life. I've been listening to Pod Meets World. And let me tell you, that's a fantastic podcast you got there. And if you want to have a Bohemian's World super fan on your show, look no further than me. I'll come through. I'll hang out. I'll watch an episode. I'll talk to you guys about that episode, and it'll be a great time. Have me on.
Hearing that, it sounded like you were about to threaten. Like there was almost like a great podcast. Be ashamed if something happened to it.
Be ashamed if somebody took it. Destroyed that podcast. What if I talk to Spotify? Get it shut down. I don't know if it's a Spotify podcast. I digress. Anyway, I was gonna listen to that podcast with the spaces cut out, but Spotify doesn't have that functionality. Sadly. Sadly,
I mean, does nobody respect the comedic silence and letting the joke sit? Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. I don't. Mm-hmm. What is happening with this generation? You know, us as Gen Zers, because I'm a Gen Z, just like Bless. Us as Gen Zers,
I'm a millennial. First of all,
I'm a millennial, just like Bless, but like, you know, leaning towards Gen Z. We need to come together because, like, what's going on?
Come together.
I understand listening to podcasts on 1.25 speed. Cutting out the silence, that's a bridge too far. All right.
Here's what I'll say. Spotify does have up to 3.5 speed, which I didn't know was a thing.
That's outrageous. Why?
Sounds outrageous. What? Yeah.
Why is this forwarding at that point?
Just play a record backwards at that point. Ladies and gentlemen, this is the Kind of Funny Games Cast. Each and every week, we come together to talk about all the things we love and sometimes don't love about video games. If you love that, come be a part of the show on patreon.com/kindoffunnygames. Over on patreon.com/kindoffunnygames, you can write in to be part of the show. You can get the show ad-free. You can get it with the exclusive post-show we do. That's the award-winning, because Mike gave it an award, award-winning trivia game show, Kind of Feudy. It was a big breakout for us last week. A lot of people tuned in for the first time. Thank you for doing that. That means a lot to us. We had a great time, and I'm sure we'll have another great time today when I win, as always, Andy.
Those great numbers on TikTok. I don't know if you guys have seen
it. And if the kids
numbers.
Like it, if the Gen Zs like it on TikTok, there you go. On top of that, on patreon.com/kindoffunnygames, you could usually watch us record the show live. Right now, we can't because of an embargo. We apologize for that, but that's why we're here with the hot scoops. Snowbike Mike.
Scoop!
Hold on a second. I don't want trademark infringement. As a Damon Hatfield lawsuit, I'm not about to get involved with, all right? If you have no bucks to toss our way, it's no big deal. There are a number of free ways to support the show. Number one, the most easy, when you're buying something on the Epic Game Store or buying V-Bucks on Fortnite on your platform of choice or buying Rocket League tires or whatever the hell you're doing in that game, use the Epic creator code KINDOFFUNNY, all one word. It doesn't cost you anything, and it gets us a few bucks from Epic, which is very nice. If you want to go and support this show, of course, you get on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames. roosterteeth.com and podcast services around the globe each and every week. Of course, there's a slew of other content shows on Patreon, including, ladies and gentlemen, the brand new weekday show XCast. That's right, the Kind of Funny XCast has moved, ladies and gentlemen, from a Saturday publish to a Wednesday morning publish. Of course, you can get early on Patreon, watch us record live on Tuesday, get it ad free and everything else Tuesday night. Mike, how are you feeling about being a week show on the weekdays?
You know, me and my gaming dads really loved celebrating the end of the week with XCast and recording that and going off into our Friday evenings. But we'll adjust. We'll figure it out, you know.
Hold on. Mike,
hold on.
Mike and I always have a mini meeting after every XCast to see how we feel, talk about the thumbnail, headline, all that stuff. And I want to bring up yesterday, after we recorded our first Tuesday record, Wednesday posting XCast, we talked about, you know what, now that it's not at the end of the week, you know, we're not getting the dads who are exhausted by the end of the work week.
Sure.
They're still rejuvenated. It's still the beginning of the week and they still have that energy. So we felt really good about the episode recorded yesterday, Mike. Don't come in here being like, oh yeah, you know, we'll miss the
show. Come on. Listen, we half-assed it and it was what it was. What are you going to do?
We'll adjust. You know, it's not the position we want to be in, but these are the cards we're dealt.
So we'll be there next week, y'all.
Blessing, you have a question?
Yeah, so Mike calls Gary and Paris his two gaming dads. Greg, when are you going to start calling me and Janet your gaming son and daughter?
There's not that big of an age difference, you know what I mean? Because Gary's just turned 50, all right?
Yeah.
When there's that big of a gap, there will be, all right?
You don't think there's that big of a gap?
I think it's a massive gap. Hold on.
Mike, how old are you?
Because me and Janet are both
32.
32. which means there's an 18-year difference between.
That's a full child. That's
grown ass. And then child. So now, wait, how old
not,
are you?
Gary's not 50.
Yeah, yes, he just turned 50.
Gary is not 50.
Gary is 50.
Yeah, he is.
Are you guys
miss his birthday? Because he's gonna be pretty pissed if you miss his birthday.
Wait, are you guys joking with me?
He's no. 50 years old. Birthday was literally last week. He just turned 50.
He did not turn 50. He is 44. Ooh,
blessing, maybe. That's younger than Nick.
Wait, Nick, how old is Nick?
He's 45?
You got to get Blessing in the office.
No,
man.
Nick is 41.
No, I was going to say, Nick 41. Is like 41. He is in his early 40s. There's no way Nick is past the age of 42 at the most.
He's not 41.
Wait, Gary is 50 years old?
Yeah.
I thought Nick is like Paris? 41 or 42.
I mean, Paris is 62, right?
He's old as hell.
No, man. I'm just kidding. Paris is the same age as Nick. Right? Like 42? Mm-hmm. 40. I don't know how old Paris is.
Greg, you're 39, right?
I'm 39, so yeah.
So Nick is 43 then, or 42.
Oh.
So yeah. All right. Unless, okay. So Blessing, if you're 21 years old, then your math works out, and yeah, you can be a gaming child.
Yeah, no, point proven.
Thank you. The other points we're going to prove to you, of course, that our Patreon producers are awesome. Thank you, Fargo, Brady, Delaney Twinning, James Hasting, Casey, Andrew, full stop. Not of the show. Keep recording. Ah, damn it. It's one of those things Joey put somewhere in a weird DM. God damn it. Delaney Twining. That's it, right? It's, yes. We've been saying Delaney's last name wrong. He was nice enough to finally write in on Patreon and let us know. Twining is right. That's right. Mm-hmm. Twining. Because it is twinning is what we've been saying, but it's twining.
Correct.
Got it. Delaney Twining, we thank you for your support. You, of course, have supported, I'm pretty sure, as I look through my notes here, for 18 months. So I will now say your name 18 times. Twining. I'm kidding. We won't do it. Well, today we're brought to you by MeUndies and Chime, but we'll tell you about that later. For now, let's start the show with preview of the show.
Preview.
Ladies and gentlemen, the reason we're embargoed is that there is a Soul Hackers preview list lifting right now. And the one and only Blessing Eddie Oye Jr. and Barrett Courtney have been playing through this. If you don't know, here's the synopsis. Of course, coming August 26th to PC, PlayStation, Xbox. 25 years have passed since the release of Devil Summoner Soul Hackers, which amassed a cult following by meshing a distinct sci-fi style into the universe of Shin Megami Tensei. Inheriting the essence of the Devil Summoner series and Soul Hackers, this one, returns after remaining dormant for a quarter century with an elevated, evolved concept chronicling a new tale of humans and technology. The protagonist, Ringo, an agent of Ion, must join forces with Devil Summoners to stop the world's end. You'll be utilizing comps, special gadgets for Devil Summoners, to summon demons and wipe out enemies. Blessing and Barrett, we'll start with Bless. How much of this have you played and where are you playing it?
I played about 6 hours. I am playing it on PS5.
Barrett, same question for you.
I've played 2 hours on PS5 and 2 hours on the Steam Deck.
Oh, look at that. PS5. All right. Well, Bless, start us off. How is Soul Hackers?
So you remember late last year when Shin Megami Tensei 5 was coming out and we did our preview of that game. And a lot of people got mad at us because we were comparing it a lot to Persona.
Of course.
Oh, strap in.
We have not learned a thing because we're going to compare this to Persona.
There's going to be a lot of that.
I'm not saying Persona came up with these ideas. We're just talking about it from a Persona fan's perspective.
Yeah. And I think it is more applicable. Like, I kind of, on one hand, I kind of understand where a lot of that came down last time because Shin Megami Tensei is established. Shin Megami Tensei is its own thing. And Shin Megami Tensei has this identity outside of Persona. And I don't think people are coming to that game for the Persona type experience. Soul Hackers has been away for 25 years. And this is Atlus bringing Soul Hackers back, which again is in that Shin Megami Tensei umbrella of games.
Okay.
Soul Hackers 2, I would say, is trying to do way more Persona-like things than what a Shin Megami Tensei 5 did. And to that extent, in a lot of ways, did bring me in. The combat system feels like it's ripped right out of a Persona game with some slight tweaks. It does have that type of style and presentation. You press X to get into your attack. You press triangle. Like, the snappiness of a Persona 5 type combat system is there. And it presents that that way for a lot of it. It also takes place in a modern day Tokyo. In fact, it takes place in a near future Tokyo. I want to say it's probably like 2030, like maybe 10 or 20 years past present day. In a Tokyo that is I was gonna say filled with crime. I guess not filled with crime, but it's filled with like different factions of like organizations that have devil summoners, which are people that can summon demons to then come out and battle each other. I've been having a decent time with this game. I'll say I'm in the okay range, not great. I think the big place where this game kind of comes down for me is in budget and presentation. It feels budget a lot of the time. Like it feels like in ways it wants to go and do Persona like things. You know, it has the overworld. You are running around in Tokyo for some extent of it, but you are hopping around in menus to kind of get to the different parts. Then also when you're doing things like going into the gun shop or you're going into the clothes shop to buy upgrades, you're not actually going into the shop, or there's not like a shop space where you're running around. It is all menus. Music is decent at times, good at times, honestly. The composer for this game is Keiichi Okabe's team, who people might know from the Nier games. And if you know me, you know that I love and adore Okabe's stuff. I think the Nier games have some of the greatest soundtracks ever made. This feels like the B team or even the C team of Okabe's team of people coming through and doing the soundtrack. It's funny because when the game first started, when I first booted it up, it has a scene that has music that sounds like it's ripped right out of Nier. And I got hella hyped for it. I was like, oh shit, let's go. Like, it's going to be that kind of soundtrack. And then you get into it and it immediately goes away. It immediately falls back to more, I would say, generic sounds, stuff that oftentimes sound like it could be placeholder. But then it gets into some places where in the safe house, there's a song that plays that feels very Persona 5 Royal in a way that I really like. You know, I think it has some of its highs, but it definitely has some of its lows there. The story and the characters also feel a mixture of flat too intriguing at times. You know, I think the overall story setup of you being this character, Ringo, who is half of this duo of essentially these like AI life forms that were created by this, Bear, I don't know if you got a better read on if it's like God created them or if it was like
AI system. It's like an overall AI system who developed these like smaller AIs to put them into human bodies and have personalities to investigate the end.
Yeah, well, I'm a big AI and now I'm going to make small AIs.
Yeah. That's the vibe that I got at least.
Right. Yeah. No, and I think that's accurate. Like, at the start, I was like, is this God talking? And then it seemed more, the whole theme of the game is hacking and soul hacking, and souls have this inherent connection to the digital in a really interesting way. But yeah, it is, you're playing as Ringo. She's one half of a duo that is like this created AI to stop the end of the world because the algorithm has determined that the world is about to end. And so you jump into the real world. You are meeting people that seemingly have something to do with the world ending, and you're teaming up with them to then investigate more. The game has this like detective style to it that overall intrigues me. So far where the story turns have gone, I've been like, all right, cool. Yeah, let's see where this goes. Or, oh, okay, cool. There's this gang.
But is it not presented well? Because that was one of the things at SGF when we saw it and we played it there. It was, you know, obviously a ton of information we dropped on you, but it was I did enjoy the visual style of it. And then I'm talking about, like, I'm looking at my notes from SGF where it's a hard boiled detective magical story. It's more of a detective story. Is it, you're like, oh, it's whatever. But is it like dope?
I think the character art looks top notch.
Yeah. The character art is great, honestly. I think the character art is awesome. I do think the production overall budget holds it back in places where it should pop and it should shine and it should be exciting. A lot of the time, I feel like the presentation falls flat, and that is in voice acting sometimes. That is in how not as polished as some other big RPGs, JRPGs that you might have seen recently, right? It doesn't have like that AAA level of budget. Even when you boot up the game, honestly, there's a splash screen that says Made in Unity. And I'm like, oh, like y'all didn't pay the budget to like not have the Made in Unity thing there. And also you guys aren't working off the internal like Atlas engine that you use for Persona and the other games. I thought that was very fascinating. But yeah, like a lot of it is intriguing. A lot of it though doesn't excite me and get me hyped. That's kind of where I fall down on a lot of the story stuff. But yeah, the character art looks cool. I think there's a lot of stylistic stuff that does work about it in terms of character specifically. But I'm curious, like Barrett, you've been playing it. Are you feeling the same things I'm feeling, or do you feel a different way about it?
The more I sit with it and the more I get to spend time with it, it's been kind of in small bursts from here and there. The more I have been enjoying it, and I think that is because of the, you know, it does scratch the itch. Like you and I were kind of like texting off air about it, just kind of trying to accumulate thoughts. And you were telling me that it was kind of scratching that Atlas JRPG persona type of itch that you've been having recently. And I'm the same way, where it's like when I first booted it up, it is a lot of lore dumping at first. You know, I was kind of frustrated with the game when I started the preview, where, you know, again, not to, you know, be a Persona 5 fanboy here, but the reason why Persona 5 hooked me in so quickly when I was assigned to it at IGN, because it was like, you know, I wasn't hyped for that game or anything. I was actually bummed that I was assigned to it for work, but it immediately grabbed me because the height of presentation, gameplay, music is all there in the first 10 minutes of that game, because you're, you know,
style.
All the style, all of that is like kind of thrown into your face in the first 10 minutes. And then you go to the very beginning of the story. It kind of drops you in the middle of the story at the very beginning. And then you go all the way to the beginning of the story to kind of put together the pieces of like how you got there. Right. And, you know, you get all of that very quickly. Whereas like here in Soul Hackers, like I think it was 30-40 minutes into the game where I finally like got to control my character and like get into battles and stuff like that. And so at first I was like, man, this is not hitting what I wanted to hit and stuff like that. But the more that I've played it, the more I've been into it. And like the more I get into it, the more I'm convinced of like, if there is ever an Atlas game that one Andy Cortez would ever be into, it would be this. I do really like the futuristic anime sci-fi vibes that's really grabbed onto me. I also really like the 2D art style, Bless. Like you're talking about, like, this definitely does feel a little more budgeted than you know, Persona 5, but because of that, I think the workarounds, right, like when you go into this shop here, I don't know why it got out of full screen there. I really like the 2D, like, art style, yeah, and stuff. And, like,
the background here looks dope.
The background, even when, like, just kind of like when text bubbles pop up and, like, the character will pop up next to them as well, like, that art style. It feels very, like a Kingdom Hearts cover almost, and there's something about that, like the along with the 3D futuristic anime art style that they have, that like really works for me. Like this right here, this guy, like this looks right off the cover of like a Final Fantasy game or something like that. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? And yeah, when it comes to gameplay, like once you finally get into it, it definitely scratches that itch. And, you know, something that, you know, Bless and I were not as into with SMT, right, is that SMT5 did the classic, you're scrolling through menus and, you know, in the battle system, the combat system, whereas like the reason that Persona 5 really clicked with me in its combat system, even though it is turn-based, it feels more active because things are kind of connected to your face buttons. You're going into
it's more square. Snappy. It's more
yeah,
quick.
It's more snappy and stuff like that. And Soul Hackers does that here, where, you know, you press square to get into your attacks. You have to like scroll for us like just once to get to like the specific attack type you want and stuff like that.
There's a level of muscle memory.
Yeah, very similar in that framework. And there's like little tweaks here and there to not make it feel so Persona, feel so SMT.
Yeah,
there's like a cool big mixture, change. I think
the big change in the combat system for this one is instead of the all-out attack that you have in a Persona, where it is you hit the weaknesses of all the enemies and knock them down, you then get to basically gang up on them. This time around, if you hit a weakness of an enemy, that then adds to your stack. And at the end of each turn, based on where the stack is at, that'll then do an all-out attack that'll basically be determined by the stack number.
Yeah.
So if you hit one weakness during your turn of an enemy, you know, it doesn't allow you an extra turn or anything like that, right? It'll just do the extra damage and then it'll hit one stack. If your next character then also hits another weakness, that'll do the extra damage, but then it'll add a two stack. And so by the end of your turn, every single time, the main character Ringo does like a thing and then summons the persona, not the personas, the demons.
Yeah.
And
well, that's how you're gonna get it. That's how they're gonna get you.
You know, they're just personas, the same exact characters.
When they were giving the demo at SGF and Jack Frost showed up, I'm like, there's my boy. Yeah, there's my boy, Jack Frost, always in these games, ready to go.
Funny enough, I was texting Barrett talking about the combat system, and I was like, and talking about the game in general, and I was like, dude, I already know, like, it's crazy how the gameplay loop for these games are so, at the core, I think, pretty good in the way that It is, you are collecting these characters, right? You're collecting these demons. You are fusing them to create powerful demons. You are using these same types of combat systems. The weaknesses and the elements are all the same, and I don't get tired of them. And, like, I even texted Barrett. I was like, dude, at some point, I'm going to collect a Jack Frost or fuse a Jack Frost. And then literally 10 seconds later, I fuse a Jack Frost. And yeah. I was like, oh, listen, it's Jack Frost. So, yeah, it very much is that type of game. What I do think, though, that if you are a hardcore Atlas fan, or if you're a hardcore SMT person or Persona person, I do think this game is worth checking out at the very least.
Oh, 100%.
I do think it scratches that that itch fairly well. Even though my critiques with it mainly are in its production aren't like comparable to the production of the bigger JRPGs, and for me that kind of takes away from it a bit. I don't want to stop playing it. Like, I'm not having a blast with it, but I keep wanting to go back to it for some reason. I want to get into the combat. I want to see what's next. One of my critiques with it so far are the dungeons. I finished the first, I guess, like one and a half dungeons. I guess two dungeons. And they're very, like, uninspired. It is very much like you're walking through corridors and you're unveiling the map. And cool, you get to a boss and then you keep going. So far for me, the puzzles haven't been clever. There hasn't been like a standout, this is the theme of this dungeon that's gonna.
So it's kind of more of like Persona 4 and Persona 3, just to give an equation of like those dungeons. Like, it's not like fully designed and all out with like the art style for like Persona 5, where it's like, you know, Kamishita's castle, you know, Kanashiro's bank and stuff like that.
You can't just glance at it and be like, oh, this is this dungeon.
No. And I would even say, like, they're even less inspired than the Persona 4 and Persona 3 stuff. Like, at least there, thematically, there are certain things.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, thematically, there are certain things where it's like, oh, I'm in this person's dungeon because it's video game themed, or it has some kind of cool thing going on. These actually remind me of, if you played Astral Chain, they have the subspace areas that are just, like, dark, blocky, all kind of look the same. That's what the dungeons remind me of in this game.
What is that?
This thing right here.
My little owl friend. But yeah, I was just showing off the background because this is kind of the vibe. I just like got into this section. And
this is
yeah.
basically Morgana right here.
Les, you're talking about in Astral Chain, the Astral Plane.
Thank you. Yeah, the Astral Plane. Yeah, the dungeons in this game give me that same kind of vibe of like, something right home about. That said, like, it seems like there are, like, based on the location, like, the first dungeon was basically street alleyways that I'm running through. And then the second dungeon, I forget what the second dungeon is. I want to say it was, like, literally you're in a digital space that you're running around in. But it's not, like, extravagant. It's not anything that I'm going to remember too hard.
Andy Cortez, you had a question?
Yeah, Bless mentioning that, you know, he thinks it's, like, fine and kind of middling, but he kind of wants to keep playing it. There's part of me that wonders if I'm enjoying games more because there isn't a whole lot to play right now, and if I'm like trying to find the joy in them.
Sure.
But compared to this game and other JRPGs, mostly Persona, like, how quickly did you feel like you were hooked into those compared to this game, where it still feels like you're trying to find the moment that really wows you?
For me with this one, I don't even know if I'm ever going to find the moment that really wows me. I think it is that itch being scratched, man. Like, it is me going into the motions and kind of feeling like home.
It's me playing Watch Dogs Legion.
Honestly, it is the fact that I'm getting that gameplay loop that I like. It is me getting into the combat that I like. It is. Did you really play Watch Dogs Legion?
Bro, I was like, you know what? I kind of miss playing big open world games like this. Like,
I'm this old lady and I'm moving around here. And now I'm the construction worker. Mike, how many hours you put into Watch Dogs Legion?
One and a half, and then I never turned on again.
To your question, though, Andy, the funny thing about this game for me, though, is that I also booted up Xenoblade Chronicles 3 recently, which I know objectively is a great RPG, right? The reviews for that game are really great, and it's coming off of this, like, you know, at this point, seasoned franchise of, oh, if you get Xenoblade Chronicles, you know it's going to be good. I played the first hour and a half of Xenoblade Chronicles 3, and as I'm playing it, I'm like, I might as well just play Soul Hackers. And that's not to insult Xenoblade Chronicles. I think that game is probably great. But there's a certain gameplay loop that is being that is applying to me that I like out of Soul Hackers. You know, when I play Xenoblade, it's obviously JRPG, but it has more of a almost like an MMO kind of vibe when you get into combat and all this stuff that isn't necessarily appealing to me directly. But I hop into Soul Hackers, and even though it's not as extravagant or phenomenal of a game as the Xenoblade Chronicles 3, I'm still like, this feels like home. You know, I know this, and it comforts me in a weird way.
Did you also have the same sort of feeling with Xenoblade Chronicles that I had for Tales of Arise, where I try to boot it up and I'm like, this is going to be like hundreds of hours.
Oh,
and yeah. I don't think I'm ready for that right now. And then I kind of like mentally psych myself out of that, you know.
My Persona 5 problem, where I really enjoy Persona 5, but it's that idea of I look at the clock and I'm like, all right, I've only put 20 hours in.
When you see that you only put 20 hours in, but then the rest of that can be on your Steam Deck, you know, like,
dude, don't get me started. That's a whole conversation about this.
We'll get into it in October when we're closer to it. But to go back to time spent and all that stuff, and thinking about how these games are usually hundreds of hours and stuff like that. And while it did, I feel like, really dump a lot in the first half hour of this game in the preview, and you know, taking a little longer than I wanted to like get into the action, I do think it dumps a lot at the very beginning to kind of almost a blessing. Correct me if I'm maybe misreading this, but looking just like the how long to beat of the other Devil Summoners games, like the first one from 25 years ago was 28 hours. There's a couple of Devil Summoner games on the PS2 that are both 24 and then 32. I feel like they, in a relative to other JRPGs, they set up the overall stakes of the story fairly quickly. Feel like they establish your party fairly quickly. Because of that, I feel like this is going to be more of a 40 to 50 hour
at SGF. I asked this question and they said 50 to 60.
50 to 60. And that's for me, that's great, especially with it working on the Steam Deck and stuff. When I got it there and it booted up pretty well and got to play it on there, I was like, oh yeah, I'm gonna play through this entire game then.
Again, comfort food, right? Like it's there. Exactly. And you know what you're gonna
like. I'll put in like an hour, 2 hours every night for, you know, maybe it'll take me a couple of months, like slowly but
sure. But if it's not like hooked and it's not pulling you through, then
yeah. And for me, like where I'm at now in the story, like there wasn't that moment where I was like, oh shit, I'm this is 100% my game. But when I first played Persona 5, that was the same for me. Like, yeah, I was more interested in the first like 10 minutes, but it wasn't until I was 10 hours into Persona 5 where I was like, oh, I think I really like this game. And I think I'm slowly getting there with Soul Hackers as well. Just like, I really like the stakes and the story set up for the game, right? Like, yeah, you're investigating the end of the world. You have this ragtag kind of tropey team of anime characters coming together, trying to figure it all out. And I'm honestly personally into it because there's like a scene in the intro where they kind of tease like what the villains are like trying to do. And it's like, oh, that looks weird and freaky. And it kind of like harkens to like more of like SMT stuff, but bringing that into like a more sci-fi world. I like that combination. And just trying to figure it all out and connect the dots.
It feels like a slow burn a little bit, but also I keep coming back on the word, the story intrigues me. Like I'm not at that point yet where I'm like, oh, this is great, or this is like I'm hooked, but I am like, I kind of wanted to see where this goes. Yeah. Like the story setup is built around like, you know, mystery, and I think even though it's front loaded with a lot of dialogue and a lot of story setup, I do think that the story setup is pretty good. It is, hey, like, you know, you are Ringo, you're hanging out with Fig, who's basically the other part of your AI duo.
That's the other small AI.
Yeah, and it's the other small, yeah. It's you guys kind of coming to terms of, okay, cool, we're both now humans. Oh, you have a different personality because the AI, the god AI thinks that we should have different personalities. All right, we're humans now. All right, let's go find these other humans. And you find them, and it's like, all right, we're going to, this is one of the things we haven't mentioned, right? Like, Ringo has the ability to soul hack, which basically means that she taps into people's souls, right? If somebody's
dead. Big thing you left out there.
And like, honestly, they're not making a big deal about it yet. I get the vibe that it's going to be a big deal at some point. But it is, you know, she is tapping into the souls of people who might have died, right? In the scenario I'm using, right? This person's dead. She taps into the soul.
Yeah.
Kind of gets a vibe of like they're latest life events or the big regret or whatever the fuck, but then they can Ringo brings them back from the dead, and that person becomes part of your party. And you get the vibe that, like, oh, you shouldn't be doing that. Like, I think it's like, I don't know if you should be doing all that. You shouldn't be attacking people's souls.
Yeah, and like the more that your character does it, it seems like that is going to be like a kind of cool build up. So yeah, like I personally want to see like how that pays off of like how her bringing people back from the dead who also seem to be like their deaths seem to be tied into the world ending and like how that's all gonna pay off. I think that's like a really cool setup.
And to jump off that real quick, this story feels more, in a way, plot narrative focused than in Persona. Persona feels for me more character focused. And that's why I love Persona. Right. Persona is so focused on who each of your party members are as characters, right? And even in Persona 5 Royal, the thing that me and Barrett love most about that game is that they added in these new characters and gave them such good treatment. And like, I think that is the heart of that game. The characters, I don't think, are really the heart of Soul Hackers. I don't really care about any of these people. But I am intrigued about the plot. I am like, oh, where is this going to go? I actually care about the mystery. And like, that's not to say I didn't care about the mystery in Persona. But
right.
I think there is such a... hey, like, cut out all that. Let's just focus on what the A to the B to the C of the narrative is.
Yeah.
And for me, I think that's why it's pulling me in. I kind of want to see what's next.
And I think there is enough character stuff there to, like, definitely grab some people. But again, like I was saying earlier, it's kind of tropey, right? Like, one of the guys is, one of his friends from childhood. They've become kind of, like, rivals and enemies a little bit, but maybe they're still best friends. And like, that's a little complicated thing that you can, like, dive a little bit deeper into. And the one thing I wanted to bring up as well that I thought was interesting, and I forget how it worked in SMT Bless for the little bit that we played, of like how the party works with like the demons and stuff like that. Because in Persona, right, the rest of your party has like their dedicated persona, where I'm pretty sure here in Soul Hackers, like you just have like a list of demons that you're recruiting throughout the game. Yeah. That you can recruit in different ways. I don't think you do it in battles like in Persona.
You're talking to them, right?
Yeah, when you're in the dungeons, you'll come across demons, and it is legitimately a conversation.
Yeah,
and
you
give
them something.
Yeah, you can give them like money. Yeah. You can give them health, depending on like what that specific demon wants. That's how you recruit them, and I'm pretty sure you can go through and. Each of your party members, you can assign a different demon.
100%. Yeah.
And like, because it's all connected to their comp, which is their weapon that turns into the demon and stuff like that. And that was something that I thought was a cool possible in between, again, of Persona and SMT and these ideas. And I'm the more we talk about it, the more I enjoy it, and the more I'm convinced that people who have always enjoyed the idea of Persona, enjoyed the idea of SMT, but have felt a little like scared off by how deep these games go. I feel like this is going to be a good enough surface level version of both of those games to get more people in, because of the, you know, it's not nearly as long as any of those games. I think the plot and stakes are very clear from the get go, whereas like Persona, right? You know, those stories usually, like, you have, like, your kind of first plot that happens in the first 10 hours, but then you don't connect with the overall story and, like, big thing that's, like, building up to until, like, 60, 70 hours into the game, right? And, like, kind of similar, like, SMT is, you know, not nearly as, like, character or even, like, story-based. Like, they have, like, very basic stuff, but those games are more hardcore into like the gameplay and how tough that gameplay is. And so I think this is going to be something cool for people to try to jump into if they've always been interested in Atlus games but have always been scared off.
The way I've kind of been rationalizing it in my head as I've been playing through it and coming to terms with what Soul Hackers 2 is, you know, it for me, it's almost what Square Enix, I think, does sometimes when it comes to, Square Enix puts out a lot of JRPGs, but, like, of course, their big one is Final Fantasy, and they have those stopgap games that get us there, right? It's always the games that we kind of make fun of when they show up at a Nintendo Direct or at a PlayStation State of Play. Valkyrie Elysium is about to come out in about a month or two, right? And, like, a lot of us are like, what the fuck is Valkyrie Elysium? But I'm sure enough people are going to play that and go, yeah, man, this is going to hold me over until the next Final Fantasy game.
Sure.
And I think that's kind of what this is for Atlus. I think Atlus probably sees that demand for, hey, Persona 5 is a hit, and there's not that many games that are doing what Persona 5 does. Let's make, and of course, like SMT and all that stuff, right? But like, let's make more of these, right? Like, what are the franchises in this umbrella that we haven't touched in a while. Oh, Soul Hacker, yeah. Cool. Let's bring back Soul Hacker.
Especially with like Persona 6 probably not coming out for another four or
for
five
a while.
Years.
Yeah. For a while. Yeah. Yeah. Like I kind of like Atlus being like, cool, let's make more of these in the way that Square Enix has so many different branches of RPGs right. that kind of work as
Square Enix just be making games, man.
They just be putting out shit, man.
Here's an RPG. You like them? Here you go. Here you go. This sucks because I played a little bit of it at SGF and I was like, all right, I could see maybe trying. And at this point, I'm like, no, let's wait for Persona 5 on Steam.
Yeah, and then,
but I want to know from Mike, the hype Howard over here.
Yeah,
Mike, I don't know your history with JRPGs in general. Has one ever clicked for you?
Yeah, it's funny you bring that up, Greg, because I am the total opposite of these two. I do not like JRPGs at all. I actually really get turned off to turn-based combat.
Turn-based, man.
It's too slow for me. I'm always looking for some activity, but there's been some games actually of recent that I've tried that have kind of got me interested in the genre a little bit more, right? I look at a game like Scarlet Nexus that comes to Game Pass, right? That has a little bit more fast and fluid combat. For it sure. has that kind of crazy Japanese world where as somebody on the outside who's looking in goes, oh, that's kind of interesting. I like this and I'm having fun with this, right? And then I actually turn to my attention of Yakuza Like a Dragon. Right. That is a turn-based game. And what won me over with that game actually was the likable, enjoyable characters and the story that was taking place. Right. And so what I was going to ask these guys is there somebody like an Ichiban that I might attach myself to that would help me get me through this experience? Because when I hear all of this, right, I'm about to fall asleep and hit the snooze button because it isn't my kind of gameplay. But Yakuza Like a Dragon grabbed me and I usually do not like those kind of
games. I would say for Soul Hackers, no. Persona 5 100%.
Yeah, I agree with that. Soul Hackers does not have an Ichiban. I don't think there's a star character in this game. But yeah, I would say Persona does have those. Again, Persona is so character driven. Honestly, I would say Soul Hackers is for the nerds. Like, if you're a fucking JRPG nerd and you are like, oh, I let me scratch that Persona itch or Atlus itch. Yeah, like if you're somebody who, yeah, to listen to the Persona the Atlus B-sides, 100%, like, check out Soul Hackers.
Yeah.
But Mike, I don't know if I would not recommend it to you.
I'm saying this, we get Mike to play Persona 5 on stream, he'll be done in 2027. By the time we're in the studio, Mike.
Woo!
I'm just saying, I would stream it twice a week for 4 hours, and it took me... Let me look at my watch here. It took me 5 months to play through on stream. So you can do it, Mike. You can do it.
I'm just going to stick with Yakuza.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, you should stick with us on the Gamescast. And of course, patreon.com/kindoffunnygames. Over on patreon.com/kindoffunnygames, you can write in to be part of the show, just like Triforce's Power did. And we're about to answer that question. Of course, you could also get the show with the exclusive post show we do, where we're doing another kind of feudy. You could get all these benefits for XCast, PS I Love You, you name it, it's there. But most important for right now is that you can get this show without any ads. But you're not on patreon.com/kindoffunnygames. So here's a word from our sponsor. No one likes waiting on a paycheck, especially when you've got bills due. Good thing there's Chime. Now you can get your paycheck up to 2 days early with direct deposit. That's up to 2 days more to save, pay bills, and generally feel good about your money situation. But Chime is more than just about getting paid early. It's also an award-winning mobile app, checking account, debit card, and optional savings account. So what are you waiting for? Hopefully not your paycheck. Get started with Chime today. Applying for a free account takes less than 2 minutes. Get started at chime.com/kfgames. That's chime.com/kfgames. Banking services and debit card provided by the Bancorp Bank or Stride Bank NA members FDIC. Early access to direct deposit funds depends on the payer. Have you heard about the legendary underwear brand that's taken the podcast world by storm? Famous for their buttery soft undies and bralettes, MeUndies loves podcasts just as much as you do. It's like they're made for you, and you're made for them. You're made for each other. Now, of course, ladies and gentlemen, you know I love my MeUndies because they're the most comfortable underwear I've ever had, and because they have great patterns. As the king of Halloween, my candy corn pair never fails to make me smile. Everyone knows MeUndies for their super soft undies and comfy bralettes, but did you know they also make other stuff? We're talking about durable, cushy socks that will make your feet sing. They even make hoodies for your dog so you can match every important person in your life. Available in sizes XS to 4XL and tons of colors and prints, MeUndies has a great offer for my listeners. Any first-time purchasers can get 20% off plus free shipping and returns. To get 20% off your first order, free shipping, and a 100% satisfaction guarantee, go to MeUndies.com/kindoffunny. That's MeUndies.com/kindoffunny. Mike, it's time for reader mail.
Woo!
Mail, 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 Triforce's Power writes into patreon.com/kindoffunnygames, just like y'all can, and says, what game has been the biggest disappointment for you this console generation? Ooh. Mike Howard, Xbox Series X/S, PlayStation 5, what's been the, in Switch, what's been the biggest disappointment for this console generation for you?
Dang, I get to kick off this topic. I'm pretty excited, Greg, because when you asked this earlier, thank you to Triforce Power out there, I did write down a couple. And I'm going to focus on my main one, but I will give off two quick ones. And that is Hood Outlaws and Legends, looking at you. Oh. Massive stinker, big disappointment. But for those who know, John Push actually brought a lot of fun to the game. Biomutant as well. Biomutant had so much energy going into it. That cute, weird beaver thing. I was going to dominate animals with that. And that game absolutely sucked. From the character creator onward, it was just a very big letdown. But I actually want to circle back and focus on the big three. Of course, if you've listened to the Kinda Funny X-Cast, you know about the big three, and that is Call of Duty Vanguard, Battlefield 2042, and Halo Infinite. All were poised to come out on the same holiday break and give us the much-needed boost to the arm that the first-person shooter genre needed. And the big goal was, who was going to take the top spot? And unfortunately, all three of them failed in each and every way and absolutely did not take that top spot. And I think that was a lot of plagued by bugs, repetitiveness of going back to World War II and nobody wanting to be there. Of course, microtransactions, lack of content. And when you looked at the landscape of the first-person shooter, two out of the three of those games, Battlefield and Halo, needed to take a chance. They needed to step up and bring either something brand new to the gaming genre, or they needed to go and make a battle royale, which I know a lot of people roll their eyes at and don't like me talking about it, but it is the hottest gaming genre right now on the planet that everybody wants when you're talking about the general mass audience. And unfortunately, both Battlefield and Halo did not take that opportunity to seize the moment and didn't bring that, right? And so you got out of Battlefield what was Hazard Zone or Hazard gameplay, which was a mix of Escape from Tarkov and Battle Royale, and just did not hit with the masses. And onward to just a lot of bugs and bad gameplay. They called it a walking simulator at one point because it was so big of maps and nothing was happening, even with 164 people on it or whatever the crazy number was. And then to Halo, to have this big lead up, to have big Joseph Staten back on the team. I'm not going to talk about the campaign because I really like that, but I'll focus on the multiplayer of, you have a lineage of so many incredible game modes. You have a lineage of so many incredible maps, and to just come out and absolutely drop the bag with the lack of game modes and map was such a big disappointment. And then for them not to take the opportunity to make a killer battle royale, which we all know they could have done if they wanted to risk it for the biscuit, and not do that, and also not have game modes available ready for launch from co-op campaign to Forge. It was a big disappointing year for the first-person shooter genre, where we're still playing the Apexes, the Fortnite, the Call of Duty Warzones, and we can get on into the Valorants and the Overwatches and all that. But right there, you were looking for a shot in the arm. You were looking for something to bring some energy, whether it be like what Titanfall did back to the first-person shooter genre, or a new Battle Royale that was poised to take the top spot. None of those three rose to the occasion. That is my biggest disappointment of the generation thus far.
Can you believe... And I never want to, we're talking about disappointment, so we're using these words very specifically, right? We're not talking about like something like where Cyberpunk was a whole different ball of wax. But can you believe, Snowbike Mike, that Halo Infinite was a disappointment? Like the build-up to that thing, the every X-Cast where, you know, Paris would talk about it, you talk about it, what we'd say on Games Daily, what we would just say on any pocket, like, this Halo can't miss. This needs to be the return to form. This needs to prove that Halo is a player, that it needs to be all these things, yada, yada, yada. And then the delays, the problems, the, you know, the huge delay. And then to get it here and have it still not have, or not, and I mean it when at launch, have it at launch and not have co-op and not have all the Forge and not have all these things that were there and then have them take so long. I think it's just, it's crazy to think about.
It is crazy to think about, Greg, and it is a massive disappointment. I know everybody here on this panel and probably everyone listening can contest and say, man, Halo Infinite did it on a gameplay level. That was a shot in the arm. That was the rejuvenation that Halo needed in the first-person space to bring the fun and interesting gameplay, right? What they did on that multiplayer and campaign side were incredible. The issue was, is somehow in that studio, nobody raised their hand and said, hey, this doesn't seem right. How can we launch a Halo, a historic franchise, all about co-op campaigns and sharing these moments together without this day one? How can we not have Forge? How do we look at each other and go, yeah, five maps is acceptable. You know what else is acceptable? Four game modes, coming from a game that has been out for 20 years that has had so many game modes, from shoddy snipers to team duos to elimination to oddball and all that in between, and only come out with four game modes was such a massive letdown. And it is weird, Greg. It's a disappointment. It's heartbreaking because they were poised to take the market share and get everyone interested, right? Free-to-play multiplayer on PC as well as console, day one, ready to rock and roll. Cross-play, cross-progression. You have story narratives going on in the multiplayer. You have an awesome campaign that should have been shared co-op. And you have all of this building into this great game that was going to be released. And then 2 weeks later, we said, oh, we've already played that. Or, man, this battle pass doesn't have enough rewards, or I've already filled the battle pass. Man, you're selling me a Spartan outfit for $20. It just doesn't match up with what your competition is doing in that microtransaction space. And yeah, massive letdown, Greg. Massive letdown. Andy, well, I saw you raise your hand. Anything?
Oh, Andy, what do you got?
I wanted to keep touching on Halo a bit, because I think if you would have asked me within the first 2 months if it was a disappointment, I would have said absolutely not. But I think at that point, we thought that there would be more of a roadmap, and we thought that there would be more updates and more maps and stuff like that coming. Because, like, first off, I thought it was cool shit that they released multiplayer a month before the campaign. That was awesome as hell. That was such a cool experience to have them on stage talking about, like, hey, here we're celebrating Halo, and guess what? It's available now, which is, like, what an awesome day that was. And even throughout all the betas and all the test flights and all that stuff, I played the shit out of Halo. I just thought that there would be more content there. And I think we always want to root for and preach having good studio health and not and people not crunching and people not staying working 60-hour weeks and stuff like that. And that's great, but on the flip side of that, we expect to see what the results of that are. And the fact that there's been one update with one big team battle map and one arena map, and the big team battle maps, I still kind of just wave off because I just generally don't care about big team battle. So we've essentially got one map added to the competitive kind of rotation, and it felt really bad to look at their social media accounts and say, like, hey, this event is coming back. It's like, this is the same fucking samurai event that started 2 months ago. Like, what are we doing right now at this point? So, like, yeah, I feel like progression was just way too slow. I think having these long battle pass chapters or whatever whatever they were calling them was just a slog to get through. And again, I enjoyed the shit out of it for the first 2 months, and then I still played it for about a month extra after that, knowing that it was feeling more and more disappointing, and then I completely fell off. And we talk about the enthusiasm we had, Mike. Like, not only were we super enthusiastic, that first weekend that there was an esports Halo event, a LAN event, the Twitch numbers were off the fucking charts. Like, I'm talking, like, the same amount that we would see, like, there was, like, 80 or 90,000 people watching on Twitch, which is, like, comparable to what you would sometimes see in a really big Valorant tournament. Definitely not Counter-Strike, because that's just astronomical. But I was like, holy shit, Halo is back, and the world was celebrating Halo esports, and it has just fallen off completely. Like, I look at this, I still get pop-ups on TikTok from Lucid, one of the esports players from Team Optic, and I see his highlights, and I'm like, did you make this TikTok last night or 2 months ago? Because it's the same fucking map, and it's the same weapons, and it's the same modes that we were playing. Like, there just hasn't really been a whole lot of evolution to it. So yeah, pretty disappointing, since there hasn't been much movement in the Halo multiplayer verse.
What's on your list, Andy?
I want to throw Mario Golf Switch on there.
Oh, okay.
Mario Golf Switch is a massive disappointment. That's just something that I was looking forward to. So I love golf games. I generally really enjoy the Mario sports games, and I loved Mario Sports Tennis, even though I know not everybody loved that game. I was still a big fan of it. Go ahead.
No, you and I are going to be on the same page. We both love Mario Golf. You are better than me at it. I admit it. You know, you know that I don't want any of that smoke. I don't want any of that smoke. But what I would actually do is, I don't want to toss out here and ask if it's all Mario sports games.
100%.
Yeah. Because I was I couldn't wait for tennis, and then I was disappointed in tennis. I couldn't wait for golf, then I was disappointed in golf. Strikers was never my bag, and then Strikers came, and everybody seemed disappointed in Strikers.
Yeah.
I mean, really I was looking forward to golf. I'm also just disappointed that like Switch Sports didn't get golf at launch, and we're getting that in October. But Mario Golf was like, when that shit got announced, like, I popped for it. Very, very excited about it. Was hoping to get a bit more thought out of a campaign of a creative player going to all the different courses and talking to all the different characters and working your way up. I just want the same experience that I had on Game Boy Color, but in 3D. Like, I don't, I'm not asking too much, you know? Yeah. And I just feel like we haven't gotten there. The game just looks ugly. It doesn't look anywhere as good as some of the more modern or more recent Switch games. Like, it just seems like it was made in a different engine by a developer who doesn't really have a whole lot of experience with it. And then Strikers came out. Super stoked about that. We played those betas. I had fun with the beta. And then you can't even fucking play 4v4 online. Like, your hardware is already so lacking. The game is already lacking on features. Why can't I fucking play 4v4 with... I don't get it. I don't understand why that is something that's, like, too far gone. Like, it'd be one thing if you were delivering on all the other aspects of what is expected from a multiplayer game and maybe taking away 4v4 and reserving that for just couch co-op or local co-op. It's just such a disappointment. I don't... Like, It's such a bummer that this game was about to come out and we were looking so forward to it and we were going to have such a good first stream of it and just completely disappointed.
Yeah, and we were so deflated because of that. And like the interesting thing too is like I forget if it local might have the capability for 4v4, but at least in an online setting, right? The most it could do was 2v2. And I feel like the way the gameplay works and like the... You know, how you're able to tell who has the ball and who you're taking, who your character is that you're in control of and stuff. Like, it almost wasn't designed for 2v2. And that's the other thing. Where it's like,
even more confusing.
Yeah. And it's just so weird. Gameplay itself, I thought was really fun. And just the online setting and stuff like that, just it did not work, which was really disappointing. And even just like the quote unquote campaign, which is just like, it's literally just like cups, almost like in Mario Kart. I did in like a night and then that was it. And I have not returned.
There was such an excitement in the online league that you could kind of similar to having like a Kind of Funny clan.
Yeah.
On the Division, there was sort of like an online league that you could make where as long as you had the code, you could have a bunch of people join and a bunch of people play for your team at random points. You never have to like coordinate, but like you're all getting points to put together towards your squad. And that was such an awesome concept, but the fact that it was limited to 2v2 was just an incredible bummer. Silly. Yeah.
Yeah, totally.
That was a big letdown. And yeah, I think that goes also to Nintendo Online being a letdown for me. Someone who plays a lot of online games, I am always frustrated and let down by what Nintendo Online capabilities can actually handle and provide for me as a game. And I think another one, I look at Super Smash Bros., like, that's a game that touted 8 players on a map having fun, and then you can't do that online. Absolutely sucks. And it's just so heartbreaking. They have cool games like this that are touting, hey, everybody's going to come together. We're all going to play. But if you play online, actually, can't do any of that. And that really, really sucks. And it stings a lot because these are great games where, 8-player Smash when you're all in the same room together is awesome. Why can't we do that online? Especially in a world that we live in now where we can't all be together all the time. It kind of sucks. So, Nintendo Online for me is always a big letdown.
Yeah, for me, I don't think it surprised anybody. The one I put on my list was Marvel's Avengers. Obviously, like the build up to Avengers, what is this game going to be, yada, yada. And I remember when we got it and we all played through the single player and we came back and did the review. And it was like, damn,
that was actually way more fun than we thought it was going to be. That was a lot of, really good. Da, da, da. And then there was a lot of talk of, you know, it's what Mike and Fran always talk about, right? The end game grind and what's it going to become after that. And it was that idea of like, well, you know, I'm in there and I'm grinding out for better gear and I'm having a great time and I love being Captain America and you guys didn't want to stick it out, but I had a group that was, and this is great. And it was always the carrot at the end of the stick, but it kept moving, right? Where it was like, you know, we're getting Kate Bishop next month. Then the month after that, we're getting Hawkeye, then Spider-Man early part of the next year. And then all those dates slid so far and there was no content, right? And it just took forever and ever and ever and ever until, you know, a year out, we got the Black Panther expansion. But then it was, that was great. And I'm excited for more in this patrol they're talking about and this, that, and the other. This, if they really, if they can capitalize on Black Panther's success, if they can do that and what it was after Black Panther, we're going to get you the roadmap before the year ends. The year ends. We're going to get you the roadmap in the next 3 months. 3 months in, the roadmap does not exist. We will talk about stuff when we have stuff to talk about. And it's just been like, still to this day, the fucking crazy cloning lab thing Fran accidentally got into like 2 weeks after launch is not out. The patrol mode that they were talking about being, you know, this free thing to go, or not, the free roam and go do stuff is not out. And so, you know, it broke my heart that they dropped Jane Foster alongside Thor. And I'm like, well, I'm not a Thor person. Like, I don't really like Thor in the game. So, okay, there's nothing for, and like, there, it didn't get my group back into it. Even Spider-Man, which came out, you know, during like the first few months of Ben being, or like, what, the first month of Ben being alive. Like, I was never going to, you know, be able to go back and raid and do all this different stuff. But it was like, my crew, like, you know, Golfar maxed out Spider-Man, but he wasn't like, he kept saying, I don't know why I'm doing this, but I'm doing it.
Dude, right. I'll never forget like a year and a half into Avengers existing, just kind of sitting there and going like, oh, fuck, aren't they making Spider-Man? Like, we heard about the Spider-Man like such a long time ago, it feels like. And it almost felt like they were hoping everybody forgot with how little communication there was. Like, well, if they don't mention anything, then just don't talk about it, you know? Yeah, that game, I mean, I had a great time with the campaign and I thought it was like a solid, you know, 3.5 out of 5, 4.2 out of five, maybe 3.8 out of five.
4.2, high scale.
And then you get to the point where it's all right, grinding the loot. It's like, oh, this is not what I want from this type of game. This is not what I was hoping for.
Sure, yeah, yeah. And again, like, I feel like if they could just drop content and give you a reason to keep going, but they dropped the raid and that was the last big piece of like content they did. And it's like, okay. And like, you know, there She-Hulk rumored to be coming, obviously. And it was all but confirmed many a time. And like, they keep hiring people for the game. So like, I still hold out hope that we're going to turn this corner. And not that there'll be content week after week, month after month, but that they'll have stuff in there that is like, guys, let's get together. Let's get the band back together for two or three more big moments, you know, where we play for a few nights in a given week, just 1 week, but a few times. And then, you know, it's sunset and goes away or whatever it's going to end up being. But like, you talk about disappointments. Like,
What about Resident Evil Village?
Huh? No, not well, yeah, it was a disappointment for me, but everybody else, I'm wrong, apparently. You know what I mean? Whatever. But like, you talk about like the lead up to that and what a disappointment is. Like, you know, I remember being so stoked at the idea of this live service Marvel superhero game. And that's coming from somebody who loved Marvel Heroes Omega so much, right? Like, I was ready just to get in there and go and have drops and have things. And like, you know, Marvel Heroes Omega was very much like, man, that was a game that we were like, yeah, it's not great or anything, but it's fun to turn it on. And they dropped Daredevil, they dropped Blade, they dropped whoever. It's, you know, we're going to do it. But then just, it never came together here. It still breaks my heart because it would be so much fun. But here's hoping they do something. Blessing, you want to close this out with your biggest gaming disappointment of this generation?
Sure. I had like a handful that I wrote down that I feel like people already know because I've talked about these on reviews in various places, sure. Right? Like 12 Minutes, I've made it well known that I do not like that game. But before that game came out, I had such high hopes. And everybody had high hopes, of course. But that was one that I was like, oh, this is about to be my jam. Like, I love puzzle games. Like, I'm down with
families. I'm loops.
I love families. I love Willem Dafoe. I love Willem. I loved Daisy Ridley. She was in the Star Wars. And I especially love when, like, there's not weird incest shit going on in the story. And, like, all that stuff disappointed me. All that stuff disappointed me. Spoilers for 12 minutes. But, yeah, like, that's one that, like, that honestly, in terms of games that I played through, like, the gap between me really looking forward to it, me looking forward to it and me not liking it, that probably had the biggest gap for me, where like I played and I was like, wow, I legitimately, I rarely dislike a game this much. And so like 12 minutes would probably be on the top of my list for that. But then there's also No More Heroes 3. As somebody who fucking loved No More Heroes 1 and 2, like No More Heroes 3 had me excited, right? Especially it being this the first one in almost a decade, it being for the Switch, it not having to be beholden to the Wiimote, which I don't know if you guys remembered or if you guys played No More Heroes, but like playing on the Wiimote was part of the experience because it was like, oh, it's made as a Wii game, and then you had functionality like when you're when you need to recharge your sword, you would like shake it and it'd make a certain hand gesture that'd be a little bit rude, right?
So like it out.
You'd crank it out. Yeah, Greg's making it right now.
Gift that out. There it is.
It had sort of stuff like that that gave it charm and made it stand out, and also made No More Heroes No More Heroes. But the idea of playing a No More Heroes game on the Switch that was cool. I can play this handheld. It's its own thing. Really excited me, and it just disappointed me in all the ways where I felt like they did not take advantage of that hardware, and also in some ways held back by the hardware. Right, like graphically, I didn't like how it looked. In terms of the open world stuff, it's like, why did you guys bring this back in first of all? But then also, why is it so repetitive? And like, I know the argument is that, oh, this it's part of a, it's like a commentary on open world games or on games that have this kind of stuff. And I'm like, I don't need a commentary that is doing the thing that is commentating about, especially when it's one of the worst implementations of that thing. You know, like that's not the way I want this. But yeah, like that's one that is funny enough. You know, it doesn't ruin my love for No More Heroes. Even as No More Heroes 3 has been announced,
nothing can stop my love for No More Heroes.
Nothing can stop my love for the franchise. No More Heroes 3 is gonna come to PS5 and Xbox One or Xbox Series X, and I'm gonna boot it up at least to see if it looks any better. I'm probably not gonna play through the whole thing, but that's how much I fucking love No More Heroes and want No More Heroes to be good. Is like they're gonna announce No More Heroes 4, I'm still gonna pop for it. Sorry, what's up, Andy?
No, I after you, I had a couple more to mention.
Sick.
Andy's been keeping this my now chance. I'm keeping this up. Generation here.
Here's everything I got. I got one to also shout out to.
GTA Trilogy is another one I'll shout yes. out. Like, I needed GTA Trilogy to be good, and I cannot believe that came out in the state that it did. And like this is similar to No More Heroes for me, where I played through almost the entirety of San Andreas. I was maybe 4 or 5 missions away from finishing the game, but it crashed on me so bad at the tail end of a difficult mission, and I was like, I'm not doing this anymore, and I rage quit. And I that late into a game that like I fucking love, I rarely rage quit in that way. But yeah, man, it just ran so bad and the bugs are so disappointing that it broke me. But my big bullet point for the current gen where we're at with video games is, where are all the Western RPGs at? There's not really any big Western RPGs on current gen, and it upsets me. Horizon, sure, yeah, but like I'm talking about, like,
big disappointment. We can all agree there.
No, that's a 5 out of 5. When I'm talking about, like, you know, the Fallouts, the Elder Scrolls, the Outer Worlds, the like, even like the fucking, I know Witcher has a port, but even like the Deus Exes of the world, where it is, I'm getting into those dialogue trees. I am getting very intricate about how I'm min-maxing my character. I'm doing all that stuff, right? Like, there are probably small ones, and I know there are ones that I'm missing out on, but there's not like the big, vast, exciting ones that get me super hype. And I think that in a way flows back to Cyberpunk 2077 and how that was supposed to be the kickoff for that, right? Like, that was the game that straddled generations and got delayed for next gen by full years. And is now out, and I believe runs better than it did at launch. But even still, like, that it's not the one that captured everybody's hearts. You know, I played through it, and I actually really enjoyed Cyberpunk, despite a lot of the issues that it has. But it wasn't what it was chalked up to be. And I kind of wish that it was, because like I kind of miss having that big Western RPG that like everybody rallies around and is like, oh, this is the one. So far this generation, I feel like it's been more so things like Elden Ring, which is more of an action RPG. Of course, big, just like Horizon, big disappointment. But then
really,
also
really kicked the beehive of the comments.
when I look up best JRPG or best RPGs on PS5 right now, you know, I saw all the top 10s, top 15s that I'm seeing are all like JRPGs, and then also like a few other like action RPGs here and there, like the Horizons of the world. Like, there's not really any good big Western RPGs right now out on the platform. So that's my other big disappointment.
Blessing, what do you think causes that? Do you think it's just GTA eating everybody's lunch? Because that is my favorite game genre, and I look back on like true crime, Streets of LA, right? You think of Sleeping Dogs, you think of Saints Row,
Mafia 3.
You think of Mafia, right? And like, You even think of, I know it was a flop, but Terry Crews was in it. It was the Xbox One.
Crackdown 3.
Like
Biomutant.
Back in the day, a couple, you know, a couple generations ago, those were all the rage. We got every single game was the open world RPG. Do you think it's Burnout? Do you think it's just GTA eating everybody's lunch and they need to reassess if they can really do this? Why don't we get as many as we used to back in the day?
I think they're just hard to make. I think that that's probably a big part of it. Like, you look back at
time, right?
It takes time. You look back at the biggest Western RPGs that attempted to release in the last generation, and it is Cyberpunk 2077 didn't live up to what it needed to be. Mass Effect Andromeda didn't live up to what it needed to be. Anthem didn't live up to what it needed to be. Fallout 76 didn't live up to what it needed. Like, every single big Western RPG developer has put out something that effectively failed. And I think that speaks to how difficult it is, how big expectations have gotten, and then, yeah, like, how much time you need to make and put out a good one of these. Like, the next one up, right? I'm talking about the big ones, because, of course, if you're talking about open-world action games, you got Saints Row on the horizon. We had Horizon that came out earlier in the year. But, like, when you're talking about what I'm talking about, which is, like, the RPG mechanics, min-maxing your character, getting into customization, quest lines, quest tree, all this stuff, right? The next one on the horizon is Starfield. And, I expect it to be good. I need it to be good, but there's no guarantee anymore. And that's also the thing that frightens me is, like, if Starfield isn't good, then, like, when's the next one going to be, right? Is it going to be the next CD Projekt Red one? Is that going to hit?
Andy, I know you want to jump in. Mine's not that long. To one of the things I want to put in there, it's your thing too, is one of my disappointments on this list was Assassin's Creed Valhalla, which I know some people are like, that's not an RPG. I mean, come on. The fucking skill tree that goes out.
That's an open world RPG. People who argue against
I was speaking more for people who probably haven't gotten into it. And it's one of those that, like, I've played a shit ton of Valhalla and I really enjoy Valhalla, but it's still a disappointment for me coming off the back of Odyssey, which I, you know, adored, to get here and not be connected to Eivor and just feel like the game has too much going on to the point that I am just, and I'm the story guy, right? That I'm just completely like, I don't know what the fuck's happening anymore, but I'll put another 50 hours in because it's fun to play and kill things and get the next, you know, adrenaline hit or a serotonin hit of leveling up and becoming deeper into the wolf storyline or power line or whatever the hell it's going to be. Sorry, Andy, I know you
wanted
to talk.
No, yeah, I just wanted to kind of follow up on what Blessing was mentioning about Mike's question. I think there's too much to lose and very little to gain. And I think a lot of these studios, Mike, at this point, like, we've heard the struggles that studios are having. There's too many expectations, and, like, no brand new studio nowadays would ever try to make an MMO, because like, you look at what current MMOs offer and you have to hit all of these fucking points. You have to have a robust crafting system, a robust dialogue tree with worlds that you can explore and leveling and mounts and party. Like, if you are missing any of those things, you're going to be seen as a failure. And a lot of it is, like, budget. It's like, do we even have a budget to try to take on something like this? And if we do, are we willing to take the losses if we're missing out on three of these 12 or 15 big systems that are kind of required of these games nowadays? And yeah, I think, like, when it comes to the big open world games, I think a lot of these games coming out and being failures are why a lot of these publishers are have shown their fear of making big single player games, because they can put out a multiplayer game and EA can put out a Madden with Ultimate Team and make a bajillion fucking dollars, and FIFA can just, like, make so much money, and that shit is way easier to do. My last disappointment, the PS5 UI. I fucking hate it. Hate this.
Thank you, Andy. It's so
bad. The PS5 UI is, like, I think the coolest looking UI, and I generally love Sony products, and, like, when you turn on this PS5, it feels like you are driving a fucking Porsche. Like, it's like, oh, like, this is gorgeous, and it Sweet. Looks so clean. And I just hate how everything's opposite now. I'm still not used to it, and mostly Power it's off. Because I play my Series X. Yeah, but, like, when I hit my home button, it still doesn't do what I expected to do.
Yeah.
And I'm still having trouble finding the right menus. I hate it. I think it's really, really awful.
I at least they still do like the one straight line instead of just the jumbled mess of like the Xbox home screen, you know? Cool. Like, I know it's customizable.
Thank you. Stuff, finally somebody says it.
Yeah, it's just like it's attacking my eyeballs, you know, blessing, where it's like at least the PS5.
I know the
PS5 isn't going to give me folders on my home screen because why? I don't know. But at least it's like just a simple straight line.
Because Sony knows that they're making a game machine, a machine that you're buying to play video games. Yeah. So they put the games front and center that they know you're going to want to play. When I open up my Xbox, it's like, here's a billion tiles, and you want to get to your list of games?
Yeah.
Well, good luck. Good luck finding
you
my
want games
with
gold? No, I don't. Well,
I
here
am
it is.
So glad that console wars are still so alive between all of us. That is one thing. Like, my favorite is you listen to Xbox players, you listen to PlayStation players. There's a hard divide on the UI, and like nobody will ever be happy or like both of them. And I agree with Danny. I hate the PlayStation 5 UI. I really think they missed the mark there and could have made something. And then Xbox stayed the same, right? They just carried over the UI that they've been building for a decade now. And there's pros and cons to that as well. But I turn on that PS5, and every time I just kind of shake my head, like, ugh, this could.
It looks so good to be like so inaccessible and confusing, and that's my biggest problem with it. Kind of like Trek to Yomi, another disappointment. Gorgeous, just wasn't really fun to play. But I mean, when I hear Bless talking shit about the Xbox UI, I mean, just organize for Christ's sake. I'm gonna walk into Blessing's kitchen and see the fucking washer and dryer there with a TV in the refrigerator. Like, you just got to figure out how to organize it.
You think I'm balling? I don't have any of those things. but also, I do like that. I always get a shout out the pin functionality on the Xbox. I do like that you can pin things in your homepage. I think that's really fun.
All right, everybody coming together.
One more thing on the RPG conversation. Now we're far past it, but I wanted to shout out Obsidian. To Andy's point of like how much effort it takes to make one of these compared to the reward that you might get if you don't hit, or like if they just don't, you know, make as much money on the back end as like a ongoing game. I think Obsidian. I wish we had more studios like Obsidian that would make that scope of RPG, because Outer Worlds, I forget how long it took, but it was like maybe what, a 30-hour game. Maybe less than that.
Yeah, it wasn't bad. It wasn't bad.
Yeah, 20 to 30.
Yeah, and I that was an RPG that gave me that RPG hit, that scratched that itch, and I thought that was perfect. And I want more of those, right? Disco Elysium, I know, isn't necessarily a Western RPG. It's more of a CRPG, but like that's another one, too, that I beat in 30 hours, and I was like, man, this was such a great time. I got lost in this story, and I felt very satisfied with it. Like, I would love to see more people play around with scope in Western RPGs in order to actually get them out the door. That's why I miss Deus Ex so much, because Deus Ex, Human Revolution, and Mankind Divided were that, right? They're in that Outer Worlds range of scope, and they were unique, they were different, and they're really cool. I think there's something to be messed with there. Like, there's stuff there that studios could play around with in order to actually get our Western RPGs out that I hope to see more in the future.
Barrett, can you hit back on the YouTube video? Like, go back to the prior screen. To the prior page, rather, not rewind. Remember how I said that looked like Ninja if he was old at the top?
Yeah.
It looks like Ninja if he was old, right? It looked like it.
Thank you for going back to that. Really, ladies and gentlemen, this has been the Kind of Funny Games cast. If you're watching on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames, why don't you tell us in the comments below what your biggest disappointment of this generation was? If you're a podcast listener, roll down your window and scream it out the window. It'll echo back to us like in 101 Dalmatians, which I still think is one of the coolest things those dogs do. Did you know, you remember this, Andy? Where the dog, they're like, they're missing or whatever, and they, one dog barks and the other dog barks, and then just like they domino effect this, like they have, you think dogs are barking at night for no reason, Mike. They're actually sending messages.
They're relaying Andy, messages.
For you to make it so you know, it's like Lord of the Rings when they light the fires and then the fires go down the mountaintop.
Oh my
That's
god.
The Greg is saying to you.
The beacons are lit! Gondor calls for aid! Oh my god, dude.
They did it better in 101 Dalmatians, I'll say.
Oh my god.
Yeah, 100%. But I mean, I respect Lord of the Rings for copying 101 Dalmatians. I didn't know they were. I mean, I knew they stole a lot of ideas. You know what I mean? Lord of the Rings pretty much just a ripoff of Harry Potter, if you think about it. Yeah. It doesn't matter. We'll save this for another time. This has been the Games Cast, everybody. You go to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames. You can get the show ad free. You can get the post show we're about to do. That's right. Kind of Feudy is back. Can I maintain my 18 episode win streak when I'm on the
It's not that long. No, it is. I've
beat him. Impressive. Honestly. That's incredible.
No, I beat him like 2 months ago or some shit.
He can also run 18 miles an hour, Andy. It's pretty incredible.
Oh, well, no, it was, what was it? I think it was 13 or 12. There was a kid who ran 18. It doesn't matter. Ladies and gentlemen, all that stuff, Patreon. If you got no bucks tossed away, no big deal. Of course, you can get it on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames, roosterteeth.com. Podcast services around the globe each and every week. If you want to go that extra mile and support us, use the Epic creator code kindoffunny whenever you're checking out in the Epic Game Store, when you're buying V-Bucks on Fortnite, platform doesn't matter, or when you're buying your cool wheels in Rocket League. You ever buy some wheels in Rocket League? Everybody tells me Rocket League's an easy platinum, but I just
the hard fucking game.
I don't think I'm good in Rocket League. Yeah, you know what I mean?
My first ever platinum.
Wow. We got a post show to do. We're gonna do kind of feudy, but until next time, it's been our pleasure to serve you.